this thing on? Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Yeah, it's on. Okay, thanks. Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, just give the latecomers just another couple of minutes. So I think we'll get going. Is the volume okay for everyone? I've never actually used a mic before. People in the back? People in the front? No one being deafened? Okay, great. So welcome to the Assessment, Grading and Feedback in the Sciences workshop. My name is Torsten Bernhardt. I'm Assistant Director of T-Pulse, which is the Tomlinson Project in University Level Science Education. And so there's our website. We are a unit that's independent of teaching and learning services at McGill, and our focus is on improving learning and teaching in the Faculty of Science. So we have two-day fall and winter teaching workshops for TAs that have free food. It's always a good thing. We have presentation skills workshops, teaching discussion groups. We have a whole bunch of different things going on. Come to the website. We also have teaching fellows who are TAs, like you, who are part of the organization, who are really, really happy to answer any questions you might have about TAing. And if you go to our website, you can find their little biographies. You can find out someone who's in the same department as you or a related department, and you know, shoot them an email and ask them a question. So everyone has a clicker, I hope? So is your clicker working? If you're getting a green light, it means yes. If you're clicking on no deliberately, then, well, that's... All right, so that's everyone, I hope. So that's 36 people, 37. Anyone else? Anyone? Bueller? All right, so most people's clickers are working. Good. And if you don't know what a clicker is, it's what you clicked on. All right, so I want this to be not just a sort of a one-way flow of information from me to you, because you guys have a lot more TAing experience than I do. There are a whole bunch of you in this room. You TA a whole bunch of different things. My background's in biology, so that's what I know best. But in different fields, there are different ways of TAing. So please, you know, stop me if you say, oh, that doesn't work in my discipline, or if you, you know, have another way of doing something that you think is, you know, a really good idea that I haven't mentioned. I mean, please do that. I can't cover everything. And just to get a feel for who is in the group, I'd just like you to, using your clickers again, and again, if you don't know what a clicker is, if you're that sort of 9% or whatever, so please just click on whatever scenario you're going to be teaching in this year. And you can click more than once. More. I think we had 37. You can do it. You can do it. 3, 2, 1. Okay, 36. Good enough. All right, so it's a whole, it's a mixed bag, which is good. It's good to have a variety of things. So looks like grading definitely comes out ahead. No one's doing review sessions. And so but 1 in 5 of you are teaching right now, so hopefully this will be something that you can take forward into the future. And for the slides that I'm putting up, you don't have handouts of all the slides. Don't worry about that. They'll all be made available online. So don't spend all your time madly scribbling down what I'm saying. And 70% doing undergraduate lecturing. Okay, that's cool. And again, how long have you been teaching? Let's see if we can get the full 37 this time. At least 36? 3, 2, 1, good enough. Okay, so a good variety. So hopefully the people who have been teaching for 3 to 4 or even more years, please, like I said, chime in, because I really don't want, I want this to be as much of a dialogue as possible, and even a dialogue amongst yourselves, though not all the time, because that's disruptive. So just an overview of what I'm going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about assessment tools, and it's split up into two parts. So first, we're going to be talking about grading rubrics, which is the grading part, the numerical part that you get on that you put on the paper, and then feedback strategies, which is all the stuff that's not just that number that they get, which is kind of weird because grading is the part that carries through in terms of their transcript, but the feedback strategy is what actually helps more, and people often don't pay enough attention to that. So starting off with grading rubrics, first I'm going to talk about the awesome power of assessment, which is obviously awesome because it has lightning bolts around it. So assessment is kind of a tricky thing because you're always making judgment calls when you're assessing students, when you're giving them grades, and it shapes the way the students approach learning. Because if their grades are all on just memorization, they're going to memorize and not really focus on the concepts and such. And so how they study, how they work on their homework, how they collaborate, how many grades things are worth relative to other parts of the course, all that kind of stuff affects how people, like how the students are going to study. So we can take advantage of the fact that assessment tweaks how students study to use grading and feedback to really bring about like a positive change in student performance. And performance potentially in grades, but also just in terms of general comprehension. I mean, people always talk about universities as being places where you learn as opposed to simply get grades. But that's often lost in sort of the shuffle of people trying to get grades and doing assessment. So the learning objectives for part one are that hopefully you'll be able to articulate reasons for developing criteria and standards for grading, and also that you'll be able to develop grading rubrics for a range of different tasks. So I'm going to split group up. Oh, this is not split up very well. All right, so I'm going to say everyone from sort of this divider to this side is Team A, and everyone from this divider here is Team B. And so just think about it for a couple of minutes, and talk amongst yourselves about what your concerns are about grading and feedback. And Team A, I want you to think about this in terms of, like, as an undergrad, what you have as concerns, and Team B, this side, from the grader's perspective. So I'll just give you a couple of minutes just to sort of think about that and just talk amongst yourselves a little bit about what the concerns are that you would have in those roles. Okay, so that's been a couple of minutes. And so, Team A, undergrads, although you look older than that. A little bit older. So what are the sort of the concerns that you have as undergrads about grading and feedback? Oh, yeah, I know. I encountered so much of that when I was doing my grad work. Okay, so how do I get into med school? That's a good one. Anyone else? Yeah, being treated fairly, that's a really big one. Yeah, being shown there's no discrimination, that it's consistent. Getting the results you sort of you think you honestly deserve based on how much work you put into it. That's really feeding back into the whole med school thing, isn't it? Oh, give me more grades. Oh, and also, how did I do? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so sometimes it can actually be kind of difficult when you're trying to give feedback to them to get them to understand that this is actually the more important thing, even though a poor grade can follow them, you know, in a more concrete way as they see it. How about grad students? What are your concerns? Yeah, trying to convince them to actually start up a dialogue because, yeah, undergrads are often pretty frightened of talking to TAs and especially professors. So, yeah, that's a difficult thing to do. So fairness from the other side as well, and sort of justifying how to give them feedback that they actually use. Yeah. So this is again sort of the dialogue thing in terms of getting like feedback from them in terms of what you've been saying to them and whether that has sort of worked or not. Go to the side there. Yeah, time spent grading. That's obviously a big one. Changing grades and when is justified and the horrible times when they bring up something you say, oh wait, does this apply to everyone now? Yeah. I think it's one more right there. Yeah, so to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Okay, just last one then. In that case, I think. Yeah, so. Yeah, so I mean, the whole resubmission, like that's not really in your hands. But the best thing for that is probably to try to give them feedback and try to get them to come into office hours and such. And so try to focus more on that to try to give them the direction to get how they can improve things. Okay, so we'll move on from there. And these are all really valid concerns. And if you feel that I'm not covering these, put your hand up at some point and say, but what about such and such? Because like I said, I really want this to be a dialogue without any boundaries. All right, so let's take a couple of minutes and grade an essay question. So there should be a sheet you have that says sample answers to psychology essay question. It has two short essays on it. Whoops. So just take a few minutes, just like sort of 4 minutes or so, and grade them. Just be quick and do your best. Don't spend too much time on this. And the grade should be out of 12. Another 30 seconds or so. Anyone need just a little bit more time? We're basically done. Okay, so using your clickers, out of 12, what grade did you give student A? So just click the number on the that shows up on the left for the grade that you put in. So basically 8 to 10 for pretty much everyone. That's a really interesting distribution. All right, how about student B? Is the distribution going to be that interesting as well? Another couple? One more. Okay, so if we're talking about fairness and consistency, well, consistency at least. So student B is all over the place. So what I'd like you to do now is to take the grading guidelines essay question that you have, which looks like this, and just give another 4 minutes, and if you could just grade them again, this time with the rubric. About 30 seconds or so. Anyone need more time? Okay, so you can see where this is going to go. So what grade did you give student A with the rubric this time? Okay, so, this is looking rather similar. Although it's flattened a lot. I think it was 60% that was in that one before. And how about student B? And then we're going to compare and contrast, as you can imagine. So student B looks like much more of a sort of a normal distribution. Ah, okay, so this has shifted. So this got upgraded to the new turning point on this computer, and what it should have done is actually had the first and second goes next to each other, which it is not doing. So you can see here 60% of you, so we'll just do it sort of manually. So for student A, without the rubric, 60% gave a grade in the 8 to 9.9 range, and then those were fairly even around that. Student B, I don't know what to call that distribution, but you can see what it is. So student A with the rubric, it looks like, so the grades have actually spread out, haven't they? Okay, that's wrong. So ideally with a rubric, what you would get is more like what happened with student B, where so you get, you know, I think, so the grades will start to converge. And in general, this has happened in the past. So congratulations, you're, you know, like the sort of the two sigma event. So rubrics, in general, are great things because it allows you to have fairer marking. It allows things to be more consistent because you don't have the effect of the marker having such a huge impact as you do when you're just sort of thrown an essay and say, here, grade this out of 12. And my first experience grading as a grad student was essay questions about this length, over 100 of them, and no grading rubric, and just go. And it was pretty terrifying. I think I would have really have liked to have had a rubric. So I'm just going to walk through a little bit in terms of about rubrics and sort of making them. So first of all, I'm just going to talk about, so yeah, because grading always has difficult decisions in it, so you need to make an informed judgment, and a grading rubric, it helps you with that because it says here, it establishes and documents the criteria, and the documents is a great one for students coming to you afterwards saying, how come I got this grade? And you can actually show them a rubric, and you can sort of show them where they gain and lost points. It doesn't necessarily stop them from saying, well, maybe I can get a 4 instead of a 3 in this, you know, this subcategory. But it does help a lot for them to understand. And although people who are trying to, you know, like grub for more grades are always going to do that, it does help to explain to them where they went wrong. And if you have other people that you're sharing a particular question with for grading rubrics, then it helps that that everyone understands what the terms in the grading rubric are, because sometimes if a poorly made grading rubric is a little bit ambiguous, and so people will take different criteria in different ways. So that was sort of a little bit of an introduction to grading rubrics. We're going to talk a little bit now about actually making grading rubrics, which are split up into traits, and then the traits have various levels of performance that have scoring scales on them. So grading rubrics, like we said, it makes the grading process much more consistent and fair. And if it's a team of TAs, which you have in a lot of courses, then that's really important. It also saves time. So did you find in general that it was faster to do it with the rubric than without, to come up with a grade that you were happy with, and that grade that you felt was all right? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, so it's, whereas if you don't have a rubric, then it's just a little, like, it's sort of the same. You don't speed up to the same extent that you do. Like that, wishy-washy is, you know, decision making. I'll have to use that in the future. Rubrics also help you to convey what you expect of students. So one thing you can do is you can actually show them the class in general the rubric. And if this is a repeated sort of assignment, then they can say, oh, well, you know, this is how I need to, you know, build up what I'm doing. This is what, you know, what I need to explain so I don't skip over these steps and just assume that they're obvious. I need to be more explicit about them, things like that. There's controversy in terms of whether you should, if you're going to post a rubric, whether you should actually have the point values on it. So I don't know if anyone wants to strongly discuss that, but some people think it's a good idea and some people think it's a bad idea. And I think that's kind of a personal decision. If you're putting that up beforehand, because there are some assignments where it makes sense, you can put the rubric up so people see how they should be structuring it. And if you put points on it, then you can imagine that students will say, oh, well, that's worth 5 points, and that's only worth 1 point, so I'm not going to do very much, you know, put much effort into this part, even though it is an important part of the assignment overall. But green rubrics in general, you know, they tell the students what is expected of them. And it also helps afterwards if they see it to evaluate their own work, because they can go through and see on their own without having to come to you where they fell short. And if you're explaining grade students, it helps you can kind of, you know, point out where they failed, and it's a more structured approach to that, so that can save time as well, especially if you have a lot of students who are going to come in and try to get more grades because they have a lot of pre-meds. I mentioned the traits and the scales for evaluating in rubrics. So, I mean, here's an example of a sort of goofy one for novice bakers and their chocolate chip cookies. As you can see that the traits in this case are baking time and chocolate chips. Baking time has 3 levels of performance. Chocolate chips has 2. And you can also see that the grading in this depends very... So if it's out of 7, then chocolate chips basically get you a 5 out of 7 if you put them in at all. And so with the rubric, one of the things to look out for is how you're weighting the different parts of it. Because in this case, you can burn all your cookies and still get a 5 out of 7, whereas even if your cookies are really, really lovely and golden brown, but you didn't put in chocolate chips, you get a 2 out of 7. So rubrics are not sort of value-free entirely. So in terms of designing a grading rubric, I'm just going to quickly look at, if you can just take a look at, and only the front page, of the individual learning activity that looks like this. All right, so with that data, here is a sample graph that was made. So it's a pretty simple graph. Doesn't have a great R-squared, I'm imagining. And what I'd like you to do is just take a couple of minutes and just for the graph, just assuming that they have to make a graph for it and that they aren't given a graph like this as a key. If they have to make a graph out of that data, try to come up with 3 traits that will count towards the grade. So you're looking for something that will be in the correct answer, and so use a noun or noun phrase, as it says in the bottom, like, you know, baking time or, like, you know, axis labels. So sort of 3 things that you'll be looking at in terms of determining the grade, and then come up with how much each of those would count. So let's say this would be out of 12. So divide up the 12 points between those 3 traits. So let's give you a couple of minutes to do that. And once you're done with that, if you can just break the traits into somewhere between 2 and 5 levels of performance. So if you're looking at something like the axis labels, are they properly labeled? Do you have the dependent and independent variables on the right axes, things like that? And describe each of those levels really briefly. Does anyone need more time? All right, so now that you've gotten that, and also just quickly do the points for it. Like how many points each of those levels of performance has, which ideally you have done. And once you're done with that, take a look at the 4 plots that are on the next page. And just do a pilot test of your rubric. Just see how well it deals with these graphs, and then see if there's anything you need to tweak with it. Things to look out for are any of the traits in which everyone's getting 0 points or full points for that trait. That usually means that it's something that really just isn't working well and needs to be tweaked. Anyone need more time? It's more important to get a feel for it than to actually go through it for each and every one of them and go back and like, come up with a rubric that you think is absolutely perfect. All right, so you know, just think briefly to yourselves more or less, like, what changes you'd make to your rubric sort of after piloting it. Which I'm sure you're coming across as you're going through some of the plots, especially I think I like the upper left-hand one best, that sort of connects all the dots in random order. I like that one. All right, so we're coming to the end of the grading rubric side of things, so I just want to take a second to just talk a little bit about academic integrity and cheating. Just so you know, the official McGill policy is that as graders, you do not accuse the student. If you do that, you can mess up the whole procedure that McGill has. What you should do is, as it says here, report the incident to a course instructor and they will deal with it. So don't ever accuse a student of cheating directly. Go to the course instructor and talk to them. And, in terms of cheating, like prevention is always possible. So, try to bring up the fact that, plagiarism it hinders learning. And if you can maybe exchange a dialogue with a course supervisor a little bit to get them to explain that as well. And there are also ways around that if you can have something like a mini oral exam during your office hours instead of giving them, tests. And you can talk with the course supervisor about that. They're often kind of open to slight changes, especially if you're the one doing the extra work. But so just basically just a little section on academic integrity. And sort of just to summarize the grading rubric, so what you want to do is you want to set a clear criteria and standards for the grading, and the grading rubric helps with that. And they also help keep things fair and consistent across many graders. So we're going to take a brief break right now. If you just want to get up and stretch for a minute, because I find this room really warm. I don't know if anyone else does, but... And then we have a video. Did everyone hear that? So the question was, sometimes while grading with a rubric, you start coming across new and interesting ways that the students are answering things, and you sort of, start changing the rubric as you go, just because you haven't come across them, these sorts of errors before. And so you're just asking if anyone else has had that situation. And one of the responses was yes, and so what you can do is you can sort of randomly sample beforehand and sort of, so basically piloting the rubric along with like randomly sampled, exams. And so that way you get a better feel for what kind of things the students are coming up with. Is that a good thing? Does anyone else have any comments on that? Yeah? Yeah, and it's always tricky in terms of whether you show them the rubric and whether people then will sort of, slavishly follow that in terms of trying to get the points. If it's something, is this more like an essay question? Or, okay, lab reports, yeah. whether or not you want to show the rubric, I mean, that's more like a personal thing. Because I can see pros and cons for it, but I'm not certain what. I don't think there's an absolute, you know, yay or nay to it, because you can argue that by showing them the rubric, you know, you're showing them how to write a lab report. These are the important things in it, and you can also say that, yeah, then you know, they'll be following that as opposed to using any sort of initiative or imagination on their own. And so it's tricky to debate that. Some people feel that so depending on how you set up the rubric, you can set it up in sort of, you know, the traits and the scales that you have, they can be things that actually do reward initiative. I'm having trouble coming up with a way of doing that right now, sort of imagination, that still allows you to be fair and consistent, but that also allows the students to be able to sort of, you know, explore things a bit more. I'm a big fan of, of letting the students know sort of, you know, what you're expecting of them, rather than simply saying, write an essay about left brain, right brain, and then, you know, afterwards saying, haha, but you didn't mention, you know, Phineas Gage in particular. So, yeah. I think one of the ways you can get around that is by asking a clearer question. So, you know, like write an essay and, you know, and rather than just saying write an essay about the myths of the left and right hemisphere, you can give more information in the question that doesn't necessarily hem them in and force them to only talk about these three things, but so that they know what should be covered, you know, at a minimum. Yeah, so, I mean, one of the first slides when I was talking a little bit about how, you know, assessment, you know, the way in which you assess the students sort of, you know, guides them in terms of, you know, what they do and how they study. And so, like, the way you ask the question is part of that, so that they know better, you know, how to answer in a way that actually makes sense. Yeah? Can you just speak up? The problem is that you're talking to me, and so no one is in the sort of the cone of your voice. Did everyone hear that? I am not certain how to deal with a prof like that. Does anyone else have any ideas on how to? Because, I mean, that's just a really unfortunate situation. So one thing you could potentially do is to, you know, go over that professor's head, which can burn bridges and it can, you know, cause you problems. But if you go to, say, the head of the department with that, or perhaps, like, sort of, if there's a I don't know what the ombuds person like situation is like for grading and for these and for that, but there should be some way that I don't know offhand. I should write that down, actually. But, yeah. All right, so I'd like to move on to the next section, which is feedback. I just want to show you just a quick video. It's about 2 minutes long, which will hopefully work. So this is an attempt at grading and feedback. While you're watching this, think about... think about the grading rubric and the style of feedback this person is using.
There goes your weekend, eh, Markin?
Really? Let me explain how this works. If these were regular tests, what I would do is I would find the smartest students, Maya, and I would mark hers first.
Right.
And I'd use that as my answer key. But these are essay questions. Now, if I were to read these, it would take forever. So I don't. So I look at their mark going into it. Okay, like Maya, where's Maya? Has the highest mark in the class. There she is. So that's my answer key.
Don't you already know the answers?
Sometimes theirs are better. I got to give her a good mark, a couple circles, and then sometimes too vague.
Right.
That way I don't have to give her 100.
Yeah,
they only look
keep
at
it
the
realistic.
Mark. 96. I give her a little more than she has going in. That way she won't come back.
Right.
And challenge me. Okay?
That's a good system.
Jimmy, look at Jimmy. Nothing.
Right, it's covering nothing.
Garbage. Waste of time. 33, there's some words there, but I have no time to read them. So then I get angry. Jimmy. Ridiculous.
Right.
This has got to stop.
He could say the same thing to you.
Okay, you got the system?
Yeah, it's a good system, buddy.
You do those ones.
You want me to mark them?
You don't really mark. You just
all right.
You put marks on it, and you put a circle. You circle a number.
Good. I'm a forger.
Okay, right here's now. Mike. Now, Mike, he's got a 62.
You should give him an 80.
Give
That'll
him an
make
80.
His day.
Make his day.
Right.
Okay. And he goes home. His parents are excited. I like that. Finally.
Like you've been rooting for him the whole time.
Yeah. About
right.
time. Thank
That's
you.
Good.
This person, Shauna, I don't like her. Drives me nuts.
Right.
So what I do is I fail her on the exam, but I just give her enough to pass the course so I don't have to teach her again. So it's like a lot of check marks, some question marks, underline some things, a couple good comments.
Mediocre.
I've used that one. That's a good one. Happy face, smile.
That's disturbing.
You are almost a teacher.
So you note the how not to with the marking. So, yeah, that is from the television show Mr. Deed. I passed that off once before showing it as a documentary. The CBC had done an undercover documentary on how teachers grade. It was great. People were like, 20, 30 seconds in, people were really like, oh, yeah, wait, what? So, I mean, honestly, he could have just used like some stares and thrown the exams on them and saved himself some time. But, so, that is obviously how one does not grade. So I want to talk now about feedback strategies. So feedback is basically everything that's not just that number that shows up on their transcript. And feedback is a comparison between the actual performance and some established standard. So I'm going to use that compass analogy a lot in the sense that if somebody gets a 70 on an exam, they know that they passed and they could have done better, but it doesn't tell them how they could have improved. And feedback is what tells them how they could have improved. So it gives them a direction to go in, like the compass. So I'm going to talk about the types of feedback that can be given and also the delivery method. So the learning objectives for this part, and so hopefully you'll be able to find useful feedback and its role in learning, describe different kinds of feedback, and choose feedback strategies that best fit a grading situation. So feedback is useful when it guides students to respond with actions that can improve their performance, not just work harder or do better, but something like, you know, think about your trigonometric relations. That students receive it in time to respond. If the students are handing in an assignment every week and they only get the grades back with feedback a month later, they've handed in three other assignments in that time and they've forgotten what was on that first assignment and what their concerns were. So you have to give it to them pretty quickly for them to be able to actually be able to respond to it before the next assignment. And also in time to respond in terms of the layout of the whole course, because at the beginning of the course, you can give, if you give them a lot of feedback then, you kind of front load how much effort you put into putting feedback at that point. What you can do is you can spend more time there, and then they can hopefully use that feedback the whole rest of the course and try to improve things. If you put a whole bunch of feedback on the final exam, nobody looks at their final exams. So you want to put feedback in the beginning if you can, and that way they'll have more time to respond over the course. It should also motivate them. So you want, like I said, in terms of giving them a direction, means that there's motivation there because now they know what they can do to improve things. And hopefully it'll also encourage a dialogue. So when they come up to you, if they come up to you and the only thing they have on their grade, on their exam is a 70, then they don't know where to start in terms of where they can go better, and you'll have to go back through that that exam and take a look at it. Whereas if you have specific comments, then they know what to ask you about, and they'll know, they won't spend time, and you won't spend time talking to them about things where they just look at them and go, oh yeah, okay, well I know that, okay, fine, but here's the part that I really need to have explained to me. So if you have useful feedback, then they can come back and talk to you only about the things that they don't understand why they went wrong. It also helps with self-assessment, so that before they even come in to talk to you, they can look at the feedback and they can work out for themselves a little bit in terms of where they're doing well and where they're doing poorly. So there are several different types of feedback. So in terms of approach, the directive tells the student how to fix a problem, and that's basically a sort of just do this sort of feedback. Facilitative, on the other hand, is more sort of almost a Socratic method. It's guiding the students to find out their own solution and work through the steps themselves a bit, but it's still giving them that direction to go in. In terms of the scope, local is sort of as you're going through various problems, you're marking off different bits of them in terms of where they have done well and where they have done poorly. And then globally, you can just write, you know, up near the grade, the about time, thank you, from the video, that kind of thing. It's just like, you know, a global, which is an overall impression of the performance that's supported by all the little local comments and the comments you put in it as you go. And you can also choose how much detail you want to put into it. You can make it really elaborate and, you know, basically give a little mini essay almost of yourself to do it. Or you can be very, very concise. That's going to depend on how much time you have, which is always a concern. So remember those data plots, those weird data plots that you had to grade. So imagine you have 75 of them, and you want to give not just a grade, but you want to give, you know, feedback on this sort of thing in terms of where they have done well and where they have done poorly. So what kind of challenges do you see with that? Does anyone just want to quickly chime in with any challenges they might think they would have if you had a whole bunch of those sorts of plots to grade? So, I mean, you might have a problem just in the sense that they're all wrong in such vastly different ways, which is, you know, one of the big issues, that it becomes difficult because if you have something like a rubric, then you get faster as you go because you know the rubric and you can work your way through it. But if you're giving feedback, it's often trickier because things can go wrong in different ways and different people need different sorts of feedback. So that's a tricky thing to have to work your way through. So in terms of how much feedback you give, you want to give the detailed feedback for where you think it'll really make a difference. So sort of teachable moments where you think like, ah, okay, if I explain it this way, they'll hopefully get this concept or this idea. So what you want to do is you want to devote your time just a couple of most important skills. If you give them 47 different things they need to improve, it's just going to be so overwhelming. They're not going to know what they should focus on, and it'll be really intimidating. And you also want to put in a situation where they can actually make a difference. So sometimes you'll have a situation in which there isn't anything they can really do in particular that you can suggest that will help them in the future. And you also want to link to that, put in situations where you can increase the motivation or the confidence of the students. You want to include both positive and negative feedback. So when it's positive, just avoid empty praise. Not just good, 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 but you know, if there's a particularly clever transformation they use, then great. And if it's someone, if it's something where you're getting repeated problem sets or whatever from that student, then if you remember who they are, it really helps if you let them know that you remember who they are, not in sort of a creepy way, but in a way of, so you can actually say like, oh yeah, you're getting this now sort of thing, so they can see that they're getting better. In terms of negative feedback, you want to be specific, not just wrong, and you should never ever write something like dumb. What you want is even the negative feedback should be something saying you did this wrong, but here's how you can improve it. So you want to show them where the process went wrong, and you want to give them, again, a direction to go and give them concrete ideas for how they can improve things. And when I think of feedback, I generally just think of what you are literally writing down on, the exam or on the problem set, but there are also different things that you can do. So you can write directly on that submission, but you can post model solutions, you can put up a filled grading rubric, or not. Like I said, that's the sort of thing that people disagree about. You can give out a printed checklist of common errors. I knew someone who would have a checklist where he'd have, it's like sort of like wrong significant digits would be something like WSD. And he would just, so he just write that so he didn't have to write, incorrect significant digits and everything. And he made sure that all of the students knew where the list of this sort of little checklist of common errors were. And you can also just post general comments online, which can be just a list of, what people in general did incorrectly. You can bring these things up during the lab or the tutorial while you're doing it. And you can also invite students to office hours if they're really not doing well on their, what they're submitting, for instance. You can write, please see me, and just put down your office hours. And hopefully they won't find that too scary and they will come and see you. But that's a really good way if you think that the student is close to something, but you don't have the time to sort of write down on their, on their form what they need to change. You can ask them just to come see you. And in terms of the time one assigns for feedback, there's always the balance between quality and efficiency. So quality, if you wanted to write 500 words of feedback for every single student, you could do that, and it would probably be a really big help. But you don't have that time. You need to be more efficient. And so the way in which you're delivering your feedback and the types of feedback that you're getting, you can play around with that to get into it. So when you're selecting a feedback strategy, you can think about things like how much the task is worth. So is it worth putting a huge amount of effort into giving lots of feedback for something that isn't worth very much? The students may not really read that feedback or take it very seriously. And, how heavy is your grading load for the task? How much time do you have? How much time do you have for each individual student? What the level of thinking that the tasks are? So does anyone here know about Bloom's taxonomy? So it's basically a taxonomy of sort of like the complexity of thinking that starts from just like rote memorization at the bottom and goes through like various sort of more complex levels. And basically the more basic the thinking is, if it's just memorization, then there's not much point in putting a lot of feedback into it. But the more complex the tasks are at in terms of the levels of thinking, the more the feedback can help students with it. You should also think about how skilled and advanced the individual students are and if there's a lot of diversity in the class. If it's an introductory class, then the students may well not really know what they're doing in university yet, and they don't have a feel for, how to do these assignments. Whereas at the upper levels, you can focus more on the higher level conceptual things that they're getting wrong. And also, some classes have a lot of diversity. By the time you get up to a 400-level class, the students are usually pretty focused. It's people from one department who are studying one sort of thing fairly deliberately and fairly intensively, Whereas you might have a 200-level course that has students from all sorts of different departments, in which case you're going to have to be careful about the feedback you give, because you're going to have to worry about things like jargon for a 200-level course that has students from many different departments, much more than you would about the jargon that you use for a 400-level course where everyone has pretty much the same background. The means of communication you have at your disposal in terms of, do you have office hours? Are you only grading exams and that's all you're doing? You know, that will depend on, you know, how you, what sort of feedback you use for them. And also, are they ever going to be doing this again? How much are they going, how much feedback do they need about doing this properly in the future if this is something they're doing once because it's of historical interest to the class? So, I'm just going to throw up a couple of different scenarios, and I'd like to think about them for a couple of minutes and then just come up with, like, some feedback strategies and, or just things to keep in mind when you're deciding on exactly what your feedback strategy is going to be for these scenarios. So the first one is these lab reports. So I'm just going to give you a minute to take a look at them. I'll look at it. And just think about what your concerns would be and how you would go about developing what your feedback strategy would be. So what are the important things that you would take out of this in terms of, that would help you in terms of determining what your feedback strategy would be? So one thing that jumps out at me is that, so it's a freshman physics course, it's the first physics lab of the year, and it's due at the end of the session. Which means that this is quite possibly the first thing they're going to hand in university for a grade. So I would probably try to put in more feedback for that, because this is the very first thing they're going to get back. Anything else? Yeah? Sort of publicly posting common errors is a good way to A, save time, because if everyone's, you know, basically making the same sort of mistake, then it saves you time from having to write it down on every single thing that they do. And it also allows you to have people not feel bad about mistakes they made, because they know that other people have made them. So they don't get their very first thing, their second week in at university, and have nothing but criticism on it, which is kind of crushing if it's your first time in, you know, in a university setting. And in terms of the load per TA, it's 20 students per TA per section. And then if you're doing three sections per semester, that's 60 students. So you should, you know, that should factor into how much feedback you think that you can give them. That's worth a reasonable amount. 10% of the final grade is basically a letter grade right there if they screwed up really, really badly. So there's no absolute perfect answer to what your feedback strategy should be, but these are sort of the sorts of things that you should keep in mind. Yeah. That is brave. Okay, so it's very similar to having office hours. It's just that it's not in a fixed location at a fixed time. And you don't find you get overwhelmed by that? That they just, you don't get sort of lost and lost questions? The days do? So you think you save time on the grading and feedback on that side of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Bad grades, yeah. All right, so midterm exams. Let's let you read through that. So what would you take into account here? Surely someone has an idea. Yeah? Definitely. How sort of, in terms of like jargon, how would you feel about it for this course? Yeah, and pretty much everyone's from the same or related department, so that shouldn't be too bad. So, yeah, there are about 325 questions per TA, which is a fair amount. So, yeah, definitely, in this case, it's worth 35% of the final grade, so you'd want them to know what they're doing well and what they're doing poorly, and definitely focus on things more like the creative problem-solving question than the short recall question, say. I think the last one, I believe, is the short papers. So what sort of jumps out at you here? Anything in particular? So sort of the iterative process where they can bring it in beforehand and you can take a look at it and suggest where they've... Yeah, this is a really nice course in terms of getting feedback to the students because obviously you can put it directly on the paper, and you have office hours, and you have web CT. So there are lots of different ways in which you can talk to them. But yeah, generally office hours is a really efficient way of dealing with students and their issues because it's an actual dialogue as opposed to you writing something, them potentially interpreting it properly or potentially not. Anyone else? So I would say, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, the fact that this is the second paper, so hopefully, and with 24 students in the class, you should know who's who. And so in that case, yeah, you can really sort of, you know, figure out where they have been going and sort of and change the feedback you're giving an individual to sort of help them in terms of where you see them going. And in this case, also in terms of the feedback, it's a 200-level course with no prerequisites, which means that people are going to be coming from all over the place. So you might want to give more feedback for this. And with 24 students, you can afford to give probably more feedback than you might otherwise. It's 45. It's a 45-page paper, but in terms of how much reading, yeah. So these are the sorts of things that you should keep in mind. Also, you should also do a little self-assessment when you're done with grading. So just go through and maybe add some little bits if you haven't done them. So just try to give some positive feedback. One thing they've done well, and a little bit of negative in terms of one thing that they could be doing better. Think about it in terms of if you were an undergrad, would this help you? Don't overwhelm them with lots and lots of things they need to change all the time. Questions for the students are often a really good way of giving feedback where you say, well, why did you do this? Or what if you had done that? Something like that. Keeping your writing legible, that's a good one. Because otherwise, you'll definitely get them coming and complaining. And also, yeah, the vocabulary accessible, because if it's in a topic that you are doing a degree in, you're much more advanced than they are. You have a much better grasp of the vocabulary, so you have to keep an eye on that to not overwhelming them. And ideally, the course will have some learning objectives, and it'll be like sort of a pretty concrete set of things that the students are ideally supposed to get out of the course. And in that case, you can tweak your comments to have them relate to that. So just to summarize everything, pretty much. So you want to set clear criteria and standards for your grading. Grading rubrics are really good for, a good starting part for like consistency and fairness. And when you have feedback, when you have the options for it, you should really think about beforehand, before you start grading, what your feedback strategy is going to be so that you don't end up writing a whole bunch of feedback for the first half of the essays that you're grading and then suddenly run out of time for the others or something like that. So it really comes down to thinking about it and thinking about it before you start and sort of front-loading that effort. And so, it's instructors who design the course content and the assessment, but quite often they'll be open to you talking to them and saying perhaps this could be done differently, and not all the time apparently, but quite a lot of instructors are actually pretty open to this. So don't be afraid to go in and say, the grading rubric is kind of messed up. Can we change this part of it? And you actually have a lot of say in terms of what the students are getting out of things, because you have control of the conferences, review sessions, tutorials, model solutions, online discussions. So there are lots of different ways in which you can interact with them and in which you can give the students feedback as a group and also individually. So, work with that and work with all the resources that you have, basically. And if you have questions, come see TPulse. You can come to the webpage. And like I said, there are lots of fellows that we have in various departments in the Faculty of Science that you can talk to. And we've got about 5 minutes left, so are there any sort of general questions or comments that people have? Yeah?
I was just wondering if your grades for undergraduate
grades, they prefer electronic feedback or they prefer to play email. I haven't graded for a little while, so in terms of the sort of explosion of electronic devices that everyone has with them at all times, I'm not sure. What are other people's? Like I said, I want this to be a dialogue. So, what are other people's experiences with this? How do undergrads prefer to get their feedback in electronic format or written directly? I think one of the advantages to writing it directly on the submissions is in terms of the local feedback, because that way it's much easier to point out exactly where they went wrong in the process, which is much more difficult to do if it's electronic, if you're giving sort of feedback. Yeah, so it's, and you'll be fairly certain, I guess, with that, that they will actually look at it as opposed to having to make a special, you know, a special appointment to see their exams. But there are also things that, I mean, that get, I mean, things like assignments that they hand in, those are just handed back to them, right? I mean, those, it's not like exams in the sense that they get handed back to them, they can do what they want with them, more or less. So there's also that to keep in mind. Anything else? Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to be taking away marks for that, then I think that should be, they should be informed of that beforehand. And that's something that's, it's a debate that is just ongoing and hasn't really settled down in terms of grading, because you can argue that all these spelling and vocabulary mistakes are the sorts of, things that inhibit, you know, communication. And so if you're trying to communicate with someone and they can't figure out what you're saying, you might have all the, you know, the correct words there, but if there are so many spelling mistakes and grammar mistakes that they can't make it out, then that communication has not happened. So that's another way of looking at it. Well, it might be Doctor Who's brain. In which case it would control time. But yeah. So, and that's it. That's the kind of thing that I think that if you make it obvious that you're going to be doing that, and you tell students, you know, sort of to what extent you're going to be.